भगवद्गीता इज वेदांत शास्त्र. वी नो वॉट वेदांत इज. द एंड पोर्शन ऑफ आर वेदास आर उपनिषद्स द ज्ञान कांड. सो वेदास आर स्क्रिप्चर्स आर भगवद्गीता. इट टेल्स एन इंडिविजुअल वॉट इज गुड फॉर अस, वॉट आर बेनिफिट लाइज इन, what we should be doing. So when we accept our scriptures as the ruling authority in our life, then it gives us some injunctions. Injunctions telling us what we can do or what we should do to be happy. But we, the individual or the jiva, we have some other ideas about our happiness. As an individual, we may think that my happiness or the goal of my happiness lies in attaining a certain situation or a position in society. Our goal could be in acquiring a particular piece of land or a property or a car, whatever it may be. So when we have that, and when we are not able to get it, it makes us disturbed, restless, agitated, and then the sorrowness comes in if you are not able to get it. And that's our story of life. We are all in this together, doing this. So having that background, and having scriptures as our ruling authority, what in the previous shloka, shloka number 48, if you look at it from the whole bigger picture, it will be easier instead of looking at a snapshot like from a shloka to shloka view. So in the previous shloka, the individual has a question. If all the actions have some defects, have some faults, like there is smoke when there is fire. So all actions, regardless of what they are going to come with some defects, some doshas, no matter how good those actions we may think that they are. A surgeon performing surgery, he has to cut. There is some injury. There is some dosha in that. That's an example. So an individual may think, why should I act at all in the first place if all actions are full of doshas, some defects? So in this, Bhagavan is saying, with whatever sahajam karma, whatever swabhavikar karmas are that we are born in this world with, our vasanas, do those karmas. One may be a doctor, engineer, architect, real estate developer, whatever you may be, whatever vasana you came in this world with, do that. But do that with an attitude of Shloka 49. Do that with an attitude of Asakta Buddhi Sarvatra. Asakta Buddhi is detachment. Asakt, Asakti. We are attached to something. It comes from a Sanskrit word of Sangata, which means togetherness. I want to be together with something. I want to be together with somebody. A young boy falling in love with a girl. I want to be together with her. If I don't get her, I will die. I will die. 1 year later, then we should ask. So that sense of togetherness is Asakta Buddhi. Sakta Buddhi, Sangata. So we have to give that up. Asanga Shastrena Drinena Chetva. In 15th chapter, the Lord talks about that. So at all times, at all places, in all situations, we have to have a sense of detachment. And we'll talk about that a little bit. How to get it? It's very easy to Bhagavan, for Bhagavan to say, have a sense of Asakta Buddhi. But how do we get there? Right? That's our struggle. Jitatma Vigada Spraha. Jitatma is conquering our mind. Our mind is like wind. So if we say mind and wind, If you see, they're the same, right? Mind opposite, you know, if you just turn it other way around, it's a wind. We cannot control wind. Same way, how can we control mind? Bhagavan is saying, conquer the mind. Vigata spraha, give up your desires totally. And then you get to a state of Naishkarmya Siddhim, or actionlessness. We'll talk about that also, how to conquer mind, how to give up desires. I mean, it's very easy. Bhagavan is saying all that. And Bhagavan has talked about all of that in the entire 17 chapters. He's trying to move on. They have a battle to fight. So Naishkarmya Siddhim, the actionlessness, is not sitting idle, not doing anything. That's tamasic. I don't want to do anything because the Lord has said actionless. So I'm going to just sit at one place, like people talk about us. These people go to Gita classes, Vedanta, useless people, not doing anything, sitting, just listening to some chats here and there. That's not actionlessness. Actionlessness is by giving up our vasanas, which is the root call of all the desires. With the desires, the thoughts come and then we act. So when we give up our desires, by giving up our vasanas, then we become vasanatita, or beyond the desire, attaining a state of Naishkarmyam Siddhi, or actionlessness. So in physical terms, we are still working, we are still acting, but not driven by the desires, not driven by the vasanas. And we'll touch on that also, how to do that. It's again very easy to say, okay, give up vasanas, give up desires, and then don't act based on them. But how to do that? Then you do that. Paramam sanyam sena adhigacchati. You do that, achieve that through renunciation. So here in this verse, Bhagavan is saying, you attain, with that attitude, you attain a state of actionlessness. So this is the goal in this shloka, Naishkarmyam Siddhim. And then in the shloka number 50, he's saying, now once you have attained that Naishkarmyam Siddhi, then you attain Brahma, which is the Jnana Nishtha. Siddhim Prapto Brahma Tathapnoti Mene Bodh. Samaseneva. I'm telling you real quick, we got to move on, we have to fight, and this is the Jnana Nishtha, which is para. Now let's understand this real quick. So there are two knowledges, para and apara. Apara is the knowledge that we know in this transactional world. I know you, you know me, I know the science of physics, I know the Boyle's law, I know chemistry, I know botany, I know an object. It all starts with an object. I know a physical being, like a moving insect, and then I study that, and that becomes the science of zoology. I look at a plant that appears to me as an object, I look at it, then I study more about it and the plant species, then it becomes science of botany. So it all starts at the basic level of as an object. So if we think of it, when we think of an object, let's say there's a pot, a perfect example in Vedanta Shastra, clay in a pot. We know pot as a physical object. So we know that we have a knowledge of a pot, and this pot is made from, say, clay. So clay is the cause, and because of this cause, an effect has come into being, which is the pot. So pot has, which is the effect, cause in it. Without the effect, without the cause, there is no effect. So without the clay, there is no pot. Pot cannot come into existence without the clay. Once we break the pot, what remains is the clay. The cause is there, But we have called the pot as a pot and clay as clay with respect to each other. If the pot is broken, whatever left is the cause, which is a clay, but it is not clay because we are calling it clay with respect to the pot. Simple example to understand. Father and a son. There is a son and a father. So son is the effect, father is the son, father is the cause. The son, the effect has a causehood in it. The son is not there, effect is not there. Whatever remains, which is the cause, father, is not the father because he is called father with respect to the son. So the son is not there. So there is no father, but that structure is there. Are we together on this? Vanjalisi, are you okay? So everything has a cause and effect, right? So the effect is gone, the cause, whatever remains, is. So Bhagwan is saying that this is the supreme state of knowledge, which is the self-knowledge. And how do we abide in it? How do we have the nishtha or the abidance in that knowledge, the state of supremeness? So like we know any other object as something which is other than us, this state of supreme self is me only, devoid of name and form, pure, taintless, subtle intellect, which is just me and me only. We think that we don't have the experience of Brahman. We sit in the meditation, we want to have, we don't experience Brahman. How do we know that there is Brahman? It is out of this experience of Brahman that I know that I have a mind, and with that mind, through the eyes, I can see something, the world. So the world is basically existing because of the Brahman, which is me itself anyway. So when the scriptures say that Brahman, with its veiling power of Maya, has created the world. So world is an effect. Brahman is a cause. Through Maya, he has created the world. When the scriptures tell us that there is no world, the Maya is gone, what remains is a pure Brahman, which is me. And that's Jnana Nishtha, abiding in that Brahman. Then the question comes, and we all have this question. How come it doesn't stay with us? We come here, we study, we leave, we have to interact, we have to go to our home, we have to do our chores, we have to interact in the office, we have to talk to people, and then we do whatever we do. Why does this knowledge does not stay with us most of the time? All the time is very difficult, but as much possible. In the Shankar Bhashya, Bhagwan says there are four reasons for that. Four reasons he has specifically laid out. First, he says that we don't have faith in Guru Shishya Parampara. Once we want to, first of all, we don't have a question. Most of the time we assume that I am the body and I act in this world and this is it. And somebody else is somebody else. It's their affair. I'm going to do what is good for me. So that's our attitude. We don't even have a question. If an individual has a question, he has an inquiry, he approaches a guru, Guru Upasakti. So approaching the teacher. Second is not having a proper shravanam, not listening to the scriptures. Third is being too extroverted, doing too much, with too many things in this world. We are engaged in our actions, going after whatever we have to go after. The more we do, the more we go extroverted. We have to make a U-turn and come back. And then the fourth reason is, we don't deliberate. We don't question. If a book is telling me, have I done enough manana on this? Have I done enough analysis on this? Have I removed my own doubts on this or not? So as long as we don't have these things, we will always have this problem. Why the knowledge does not stay with me? Why am I still confused? I go to the Gita class. I attend all the lectures or most of the lectures. But then when we go home, first thing that we do is open the TV and switch it on, right? And watch whatever. So it's like this, you know, a piece of land like Bakersfield, we hardly get any raindrops, right? So Vedanta, this knowledge is like raindrops. So it doesn't get drenched properly. So the more it rains, the more knowledge stays in there. And whenever it rains, some of us go out with the umbrella, right? So here, when something is going on, we all have done that. We don't come. And so we are walking around, the knowledge is there, but we have an umbrella that we don't want to go with. So it's like that. So that's the Bhagwan's explanation. So in the previous one, 49, he says, do the action with the attitude of asak, buddhi. You attain nashkarmi siddhi, or actionlessness. And then once you get that, then the next state is, you attain a state of Supreme Brahman, which is the self-knowledge. So this is the sequence of this. Now having built that basis, he's saying that now, how do you get to that? Then he's talking about all the aspects of meditation. Now these next three verses are very important. This is all the sixth chapter here of Bhagavad Gita. Once we have this basis, how do we get there? Is what Bhagwan is talking about now in the next three verses. Very, very important. If we want this thing to stay with us, if we want to have, you know, less agitations, less troubles, less restlessness, this is what we got to do. Very, very, very important. So we can chant shloka number 51. Buddhaya Vishuddhaya Yukto Jityatmanam Niyamyacha Shabdan Vishayastyaktva Raga Dvesho Vidasacha. Vishuddha Buddhi. Buddhya Vishuddhaya. Vishuddha Buddhi is pure mind or pure intellect. Again, he comes to the same thing. Have a pure intellect. Have a pure mind. But how to do that? That's the whole idea, right? Yukta, endowed with dhritya atmanam, with firmness, continuously, consistently, put all the effort in it. Niyamyacha shabdan vishayas tyaktva, controlling our sense, five sense organs, the sparsh, shabda, ras, rupa, ras, gandha, sparsh, these five, and then raga and dvesh, vidasaja, give up your attachments, likes and dislikes. So these are four aspects here. In this verse, there are four aspects: vishuddha buddhi, then controlling our sense organs, dhriti, with consistentness, fortitude, and raga dvesh, likes and dislikes. These are four here. In the next one, he has five. And then in the next one, I think he has like four more. So like that. So these are four things that we have to remember. Vishuddha buddhi, or pure intellect, pure mind. How do we get that? In Vedanta, we a very simple way to go along this journey is a 5-point program. I think we have heard of this before also. First is karma yoga, or doing our actions, and that does a lot of purifying of the mind. Like we come to the mission or temple or any other place, and then we assemble our chairs. I mean, we're not going to get anything out of that personally, but we assemble the chairs, we help serving the food, clean up afterwards without expecting anything. So that's totally for not for self, not for us. So that's the first stage of purification of mind. Second is upasana. When we do our simple terms, puja, we sit in front of the Lord, we do our japa, we do our mantras. This helps in concentration and single-pointedness, because we are totally focused to our Lord at that time. So karma yoga, purifying the mind, then we come to the upasana, sitting in front of the Lord, doing our mantras, doing our japas. That helps in single-pointedness and the concentration. Third step is shravanam. Now we listen to a lot of things. Shravanam in Vedanta Shastra is described as listening to the scriptures that describe the unification of Brahman and the Jiva. Brahma Jiva Aikya. That knowledge that we are doing here is Shravanam. So that will be for elimination of ignorance. Then we do mananam, we deliberate on that, we think on that, why this is like this. This is for elimination of doubts. Next is nididhyasanam, or in very simple terms, what we call as meditation. That is for elimination of erroneous ideas. We have only two erroneous ideas. I am the body, and this world is real. There is no third erroneous notion. Everything comes out of these two. So 5-point program is our karma yoga, upasana, shravanam, mananam, and nididhyasanam. We all know that a happy, a healthy mind lives in a healthy body. So we all are careful about our body. We go to the gym, we do our exercise. So God says, okay, the scriptures tell us, okay, be fit, be healthy, do your exercise. With the healthy body, we have healthy sense organs. Eyes are good, hands can touch, taste, smell, everything is good. We are fit. With that, we enjoy this world. Bhoga. Do whatever you want to, God says. And then, once we have done that, then the scriptures ask us, you have a healthy body, great sense organs, you are having a great time. Are you happy? Do you have peace in your mind? I'm enjoying, but I'm not happy. There's a difference, right? I don't have the peace in my mind. Okay? You don't have peace in mind? Then you start listening to the scriptures. Then you should start attending some discourses. Okay? We start all attending to the discourses. Then as we start learning, the question comes to the mind, why is this situation coming to me? Why do I have certain people with me? And this situation bothers me. This situation, these set of people bother me. Why is it like that? Scriptures tell us, yes, it is your karmas, and through your karmas, these situations are there. These set of people are with you. So to avoid that, you to rather do better karmas, then we engage in better karmas, then improving our situation, that brings us more peace and happiness and calm in our life. So this is the simple way of going around this process of having a pure mind or a pure intellect. Very, very simplified. Starting with the Karma Yoga, listening to the lecture, scriptures, doing a Shravanam, Mananam and Nididhyasanam or meditation that we'll talk about. Then Dhriti Atmanam. Again, do it consistently, regularly, with firmness, not chalta hai attitude. We do chalta hai, then Bhagwan says, okay, chalta hai. Koi baat nahi. Lekin, when we are not happy, we are putting some effort, we rather have some, see some fruits of that. So Bhagwan says, okay, you want to see the fruits? You want to see some change in yourself? Again, this is for ourselves. It's not for us to have somebody else tell us, oh my God, what a great change I'm seeing in you. That may happen regardless. But it is for us to feel the change. Is it bringing me more peace in my mind in the sense that I do not get disturbed easily in any adverse situation? If I feel that, then I'm on the right path. If things don't bother me, I'm on the right path. If situations are not bothering me, I'm on the right path. So doing it consistently, meaningful effort. Niyam and controlling all these five words. Niyam, this word niyamya or niyam or niyaman. Niyaman yamanam means controlling, controller, yamanam. We have heard of this term antaryami, right? That Bhagwan is antaryami. Antaryami means inner controller. He is not outside anywhere. He is inside me. The Lord has made space, air, water, all the five elements, prithvi, we all enjoy it. That's Lord's creation. Man's creation is create a fence on that, create some walls on that. This is my property. So that's man's creation. Lord's creation is much bigger. And the problem comes when we call a certain thing as mine. And that's where the sorrow comes. That's where agitation comes. Whenever we are attached to something and we are not able to give it up, we'll be restless. Money, stocks, personal relations, friends, position in the society. This is called Chid Jagat Granthi. The consciousness is tied to the inert. As soon as we let go of that, the sorrow will also start settling down. And the sorrowness can start from physical aspect first. The physical thing being, say for example, again, a land. Right. So if we think about it, why do we want a certain thing? Why does my mind tell me that I would feel happy if I get that object? If I get this watch, I'll be really happy. I want it. So this is one thing. And the second thing is, why does this thought come in my mind in the first place that I want it? Like we're talking about a little bit of vasanas and then how to give it up. So why does this thought in the first place come in my mind that I want this watch? That's the vasana. And then once I get this, I will be happy. You know, mind is nothing that we can give a physical shape to. It's just something which is an assimilation of thoughts. So when mind says that I want this watch, and once I get this watch, I am happy. Now, did my mind enter inside this watch? Or is it still outside this watch? Simple example. We eat food, roti. I'm hungry. I'm very hungry. Right? So roti is outside. Chapati is outside. I'm very hungry. I want that object. I eat it. It goes inside me. I digest it. It becomes me. Part of me. It's not roti anymore. It's not two anymore. It's a part of me. And then once I'm full, I am satisfied. I am total full. I'm happy. I'm contented. I'm satisfied. The sense of oneness is there. It has attached itself. There's no difference now. This is happiness. Bliss. I'm full. I'm contented. I do not want anything anymore. So that same mind, when it looks at a physical object, so the mind has a sense of incompleteness. And it feels completeness or satisfaction when it goes and clings to a physical object. But mind has not gone inside this object physically. There's still different things. And once this thing is away, mind is going to be agitated again. Because mind has not gone inside. It cannot go inside. There are still two separate objects. So anything that a mind is going to want, temporarily when it gets it, it feels a sense of joyness. That's different than happiness or content or blissful. This is what Swamiji Bodhatmanaji talked about in his talk when he came in the Kapil Gita. Devahuti, she was married to Rishi Kadamba. So with the Rishi's grace, they all had good sense organs. They were young. They enjoyed life for many, many, many years. Whatever we can not even imagine, they had all those pleasures. At the end, she went to her own son, Kapila Muni, to see what can make me happy or peaceful. She had to do that. In Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Rishi Yajnavalkya and Maitreya, famous dialogue. In the fourth Brahmana, Rishi says, okay, I'm going to the forest now to meditate, to be with myself. So I want to divide my property between, he had two wives, Maitreya and Katayani. I want to divide my property between you and Katayani. Katayani took her part happily. She was happy. Okay, I'll have my part. I'll enjoy. I'll have a good time. But Maitreya was not satisfied. She said, in this entire world, if I have the wealth of this entire world with all the possessions, can this make me unbrokenly satisfied? Can this give me happiness at all the time? Can this make me perpetually happy? Answer is, of course, no. There is no physical possession which could be in the form of a wealth, money, relations, objects. They can make you perpetually happy because they are bound to end. Nothing is going to last. So then she asked, okay, well, if this is going to end, what is the point? And I do not want that. All the physical aspects of the wealth that we consider, position in the society, or physical objects, or the money part, is in the realms of time and space. It has a beginning, it has an end. It's not going to last. So when I see a certain piece of land, and if I want to own it, there's no physical, there's no rope that has bound me to the land. It's just by some social arrangement of paperwork, and that society has agreed that, okay, this piece of land belongs to you now, but after I'm physically gone, that piece of land is going to go to somebody else. So there was a beginning and there is an end. So it's not forever. So then the Rishi gives her the Upadesh of Atma va Are, Drashtavya, Shrotavya, Mantavya, Nididhasitavya. Atman is the one to be seen. To be seen by Shravan, Mananam, and Nididhyasanam. So this mind, when it feels the sense of joy of attaching to a physical object and feels a sense of fullness, that is the joy part. That is not the happiness part. And why this happens in the first place? That's the prerequisite of this thing, which is the vasanas that we are born in this world with. An engineer or a real estate developer or a doctor or an architect. That's what we are born with. And we all have the same consciousness inside us. That consciousness, when it clings to the intellect, it becomes a reflected consciousness. And that traveling through the mind and the sense organs goes out in the world. So that is what we have to, with the help of the scriptures and the listening analysis and the meditation, have to realize that this is not me. This will keep on changing. This air that I breathe is the same air that you breathe. It's the same air that is moving in. The heat in my body cannot be separated from the heat of the atmosphere or your body. So there is no separation, but we have assumed a certain form in this world that this assembly of flesh and bones is me. And then we give a name to ourselves. Then we have gotten a package, and then we put a label on that package with the name. This is Pankaj, this is me. That's my package. So as long as we have this idea, notion of I am the body, we will always have this issue. There was a Mahatma who was going in a train. India, you know how the trains are, they're always congested. So he was, there was somebody who was sleeping on the whole seat, and then this gentleman sat on the, towards the edge. So when he realized this person who was sleeping, he was somebody else sitting on the seat, he kept on like trying to push him. But this gentleman didn't want to get up. And he kept on kicking him and he didn't want to get up. And then he goes to talk to his friend. And then, hey, this is what happened to me. You know, I felt very bad. And his friend told me, well, it should have happened to you. That you didn't belong there in that seat. So as long as you are going to sit in this leather bag, which is filled with flesh, stool and urine, how can you feel good about it? You know, this is a chamde ki thali, a leather bag. And we think that I'm very clean, neat, and all that kind of stuff, right? Gurudev used to say that this body is a walking toilet. We are full of stool and urine at all the times. We are full of dirty stuff. So we have to stay 10, more than 10 ungul up upar. We have to stay above this body. So that sense of bodiness, as long as that's going to be there, we will always have the struggles. We have to give this sense of bodiness away. And all these five sense organs, for example, when we are sitting down in meditation, like we have come here. So we have come here, we have given up, we have forgotten the outside world for right now. So we have some sense of control already. So let's not feel despair or, you know, bad about it. We are controlling, we are not looking here and there. We are, you know, paying attention. Hopefully our mind is also here. So we have some kind of control already. That's what is needed in meditation also. And then she asked me to do a short sense of guided meditation, which we'll do. And in that, when we are sitting down on the meditation, we have to have a constant, unmoving posture, not moving our hands and legs anywhere. That these things tell us the, you know, the agitations in us. The more peaceful we can sit, the more quiet we can sit, the more we have a control on our sense organs, like on our tongue, we don't feel anything. Like if we eat anything, and then when we close our eyes, we have, I ate that pasta, the taste is still there. Then our mind goes in that, and as like wind, the mind travels. So having a control on that, then we give up the raga and dvesha. Likes and dislikes is going to be there. As long as we have this sense in our mind that I want that. To give that up, some kind of vairagya or dispassion has to be there. And one of the easiest ways of attaching some dispassion is, whatever happens, I am totally devoted to my Lord, my Bhagwan. See, if we have a lot of vasanas, if we have a lot of desires, and we are struggling, we can make an effort to divert our desires and make them as purpose. So we can have a purpose of knowing my own nature, of knowing my own self. So whatever effort I'm going to put is a purpose, not a desire. So with that purpose, if I do an action to purify my mind, to devote and surrender myself to the Lord, doing my actions, not seeking anything for myself, that will lead us to nishkamata or desirelessness. Whatever happens, I am not worried about it. The Lord will take care of me. This is for the Lord. I am totally surrendered at His feet. There was a priest, he was drowning in the ocean. So he didn't know how to swim. So a boat came. Oh, you're drowning. I'll take you out. Oh, no, my Lord is there. He will take care of me. Okay. One more boat comes. Oh, you're drowning, you know, we'll take you out. Oh, no, my God is there. He's going to save me. Don't worry, I'm fine. Finally, he drowned and died. So he goes upstairs to meet the Lord. Lord, I'm a great devotee of yours. You know, I do so much puja and all that kind of stuff. Why didn't you save me? I sent two boats. So, I mean, we have to think rationally also. Just jokes apart. But having some kind of dispassion, the simplest way is thinking more and more in the lines of our upasana, helping us with single-pointedness, the concentration, and then listening more and more is a key. It has to be there. And then if we realize that we are happy most of the time anyway, like for example, we know that we are right all awake right now. Then when we sleep, there are some dreams that we get. Then we are in deep sleep. So when we are sleeping in a deep sleep, and when we wake up, we feel happy that I had a great sleep. I was happy. So I didn't do anything to get it. It was already there. I didn't have to make a single effort to get that happiness. I have it already. But whenever I run out, it's going to be for sorrow. Sorrow is definitely going to come. And happiness is my own nature anyway. Any questions? If I didn't make myself clear.
Everything is clear and understandable, but it's all about practicing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you talked about, how to not let exterior factors disturb you. Like for instance, your friends, your spouse, your children, if they don't do something that you don't like, how do you block that and not affect you? That's my question. And how to reach that point where you said nothing should disturb you?
What do you think?
Do I think?
Mm.
I'm confused.
Mm.
I have no idea. That's why I'm asking, because meditation and coming to these classes, it's so helpful, but as humans, we're so sensitive. We're so sensitive to the exterior world, and it becomes difficult at times to block the exterior world from your daily life.
Being sensitive is good. But there can be different kind of sensitiveness. One sensitiveness could be that you feel somebody else's plight. We feel somebody else's pain. Because we are, you know, we have that empathy in us. We feel, we get disturbed. One sense of sensitiveness can be that any little thing bothers us. We get hurt. We get upset. Then we get angry. Emotions get turmoiled. When this is happening, this is our ego. Anything, say for example, there are people who don't get bothered by whatever happens. They're not worried about their ego part. But if you get bothered about a little tiny thing, our ego is very tall. Because a little thing bothers us. And for how long it bothers us, that's also another thing. That we are so stuck to our ego that we are not able to let that thing go away. So the more taller our ego is, the more that thing will bother us and more easily that thing will bother us. So this, it all boils down to the ego part. When we say that, how do we let something not touch us? How do we not let something bother us? That will always bother me as long as I think that this assembly of flesh is Pankaj. And this is me. This is me and this should be mine. And if this doesn't happen, I'm upset. Because it doesn't please my ego. So I got bothered. I get upset and I get angry because I was expecting this to happen. And this was going to please my ego and didn't happen. And that's where the turmoil starts. And then we are totally, you know, agitated. We are messed up. You know, we don't talk to our, say, spouse or, you know, children are going to bother us. That's what happens, right? And that's the common thing. All of these things will bother us as long as it starts from our mind level. If say somebody is telling me something which I don't like and I get upset at that and that bothers us, a simple thing, right? So if we start from our mind level, that my mind, what happens is the consciousness through this intellect has taken this form. Imagine like an ocean when the wave is coming. Water is the same, it has taken the form of a wave. Some splashes, some drops, agitated, right? Water is the same, it has taken a different form. Now let's shift. Consciousness is the same, like deep ocean. Through the intellect, reflected consciousness, it has taken some form and shape as mind. And through our vasanas, whatever we are born with, that agitation in our mind, those thought processes, take that form. And with that form, through our sense organs of ears, or vision, or eyes, we start going towards something which is going to make us happy. Same thing we talked here. And when we don't get that, we back off. Like two light bulbs. Everything is complementary. A round hole, a square hole, will take only a square rod. It will not take a round rod. It is complementary. It is an eternal rule. Same way, when the mind, through that, takes that form, it goes something which is complementary that we like, that fits in. Once it fits in, we sense a feel of completeness. Ah, I like it. When it's not there, it bounces back. Then we get disturbed because it's coming back to that agitated form of thought process.
How do we reach that point where everything's complementary?
It will, as long as we see this world, which we all see anyway, there's no way we can block our eyes. There's no way we can block our ears. We are going to see it as long as it is outside. We have to take a U-turn and do this simple way of five process, and then coming to the meditation part, which is so important, which is giving up the erroneous knowledge of that I am this body and the world is real. But how to come to that? We will not be able to do that unless we have this knowledge which we get through Shravanam, by listening. See, what is not knowing? Not knowing is called ignorance, that we don't know. So ignorance is taking something which we think it is, but it is not. The sky is blue. We see it, it is blue. But we know it is not blue. We all know that. But it appears blue. So if we ask a young child, who saw the sky, the color of the sky is blue? Oh, you don't know. I'm going to teach you. It's not blue. Right? We are walking in the dark. Simple ghost of a post. A rope, a snake on a rope. Classic Vedantic examples. We see a piece of, you know, broken branch lying on the ground. The light is not there. We see it as a snake. Because we don't know. Once we throw the light, we see it's a branch. Another example. The sun is out there on the sky. We all know the sun is bigger than the earth. But it appears smaller. It's not small, it's big. How do we know it's big? Knowledge, scriptures, listening. And we have, the more we do it, the sooner it comes to us and easier. We are all on a highway. Some cars are ahead of others. And the faster we accelerate, the sooner we get there. That's the trick. More water we let us fall on us, the more we get to that idea. And once we know that it's not me, we have to back off from this idea that I am this body and that this mind is letting me do all this. We have to back off this thought that this, I am the mind also, I'm not the mind. Let the mind come and do whatever it has to. And that will happen through the meditation part. That we will do right now. I will do a guided session. Anilji asked me to do a guided session. He wanted me to do the second one also, but I don't think we'll have any time for that. But I hope it answers something. You know, it's, we are all in this boat together, but you're all trying, and trust me, the more and more you listen to this, the more and more you come, I'm telling you, you will not like other things. You lose your interest. You know, what did that person say? What did that person do? Or, you know, he didn't look at me properly, or he didn't smile at me properly. I'm telling you, the more you do it, you'll be so happy, you know, within you, your own company, you will like it so much. Other people, when they invite you, it will be a botheration. I'm telling you, not going to places so nice. It's once you get to that, I mean, once you enjoying that fact, you'll like it.
Like they say, the best company is your own company.
Right. So you own company in the sense of not the body, but the self. Once you think and enjoy this, and when we keep on thinking about this, the mind aspect and the self aspect, and when we close our eyes, and when we sit in the meditation, and then when the thoughts come in our mind, creating that barrier, okay, well, the thoughts are there. Because we know thoughts are there, right? So thoughts are coming into me. I'm not going into the thoughts. So that's how we know that there is something outside. There's a distance.
It's always different with a small child. They don't know any danger. You know, they go and experiment, they walk and fall. They don't even know. Whereas we, having lived a little longer than them, we know the dangers, and we are not able to shake that thing off because we know what's going to come to us. And so the body is, the mind is controlling it, saying, oh, it's going to happen. Right? How do we get out of that? You know, the same thing, like, you know, if someone is hurting your feelings or someone is bodily hurting you, then how do we get out of that, right?
That young child, you know, they're playing with a balloon bursts, and he's unhappy, the child is unhappy. We know, oh, what are you crying? You know, it's just a balloon. Tumko itna bhi samajh mein nahi aata. Same thing teachers are telling us. Tumko itna bhi samajh mein nahi aata. We are no different than our children, right? It's just physically, body-wise, we have grown up. But our mind is just relatively still small. The teachers are telling, yaar, kya kar rahe ho tum log?
No, but we are at the stage where we are anticipating. Whereas the innocent child doesn't anticipate. Like, let's say there is an obstacle and the child just walks and falls. And till he or she falls, she doesn't realize that there is danger. But whereas we are, you know, we know that there is danger, right? How do we avoid that?
I'll come to that. Like the child, once he falls one, he will not go through that route again.
Hopefully.
Like there's a flame, the child puts the finger in the flame, right? Yeah. Second time he knows. Same way. Like that.
I think everything takes time. It's like if somebody comes to you and you prescribe for 7 days, it should not feel like I should be okay tomorrow because I started. It takes time with you, it will take some time. If you look at the Lord's life, Krishna's life, Rama's life, even with human body, they have gone through so much trouble. And then we feel like, why it's with me? I was just thinking today that if you think how many people ahead of you, then you'll be upset. But if you see how many people behind you, you'll be happy. Same situation is how you look at it, but that makes you happy. It just so much, it happens to every human being. As long as we have a body, we will be upset some days. We will be happy some days, but just like Jal Kamal was happy, that's fine. Upset, eventually you will not be upset for that long because it's not going to stop. It will happen today, tomorrow, here and there. But more and more we learn, more and more we come here, we will not be upset that long. That's what I think. It happened to me. I'm not upset that much, that long anymore.
That's right.
That's
Transformation. when Swamiji was here a couple of weeks ago, he had the lecture in the big hall, and which was very interesting that he said, some people will stay angry for just an hour, and then some people might last overnight, and then some will hold the grudge for a lifetime.
For the lifetime. Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the
person. Same thing with the ego, right? You know, we get hurt. So how long do we stay hurt? Day-to-day example, our spouses or friends or something, how long we stay hurt? Can we get over it or not? But I would point out one thing, you know, when you say how many are behind us, or that will create ego in us. Mm-hmm. That so many people are behind us, we are studying. I think that will create ego, so we should not think about that.
You're right, but if you're upset because some people are ahead of you, that's hurting you, then you should look back. That's ego, that's how you start ego. You know, there are people ahead of me. But then same moment, if you see, oh, there are so many behind me, I'm okay. That's just the way to just speak. Like, okay, that's what I'm here. I agree with you there. That's ego. But I think egoless life is then you're done. You don't need much more knowledge if you can live egoless. I think that's the status we have to reach eventually. Whatever we do, God is doing through us. And if we don't have an ego, I think we are done. But it's not that easy.
See, there are two kinds of egos. One is the natural ego or prakrit ego that's going to be there, that because we know that I have to wake up and I have to brush my teeth, I have to wash, you know, I have to wear some clothes. That's natural ego. That's going to come. But that, as long as it is not done, okay, I have to use that particular soap, I have to use that particular toothpaste, then that becomes a problem. Right? So then it starts building up. And then it takes us in the wrong direction. So let's sit with our back straight and our neck and back and head in one straight line. Shoulders perpendicular, hands on the knees, feet on the ground without moving. Then I'll chant Om three times and then relax your forehead muscle, relax the neck, arms, and legs. Let's be aware of our surroundings. Let's dive in and be aware of any thought that comes. Just let the thoughts march and let them pass. Let them go. And so much your breath at the level of nostrils, going in and going out. I am not this flesh. I am not this assembly. I am not this breath. I am not this mind. Whatever thoughts come, let's maintain a distance. Let's just be pure witness. Thoughts are not me. Thank you. Hari Om Shri Guru Namaha. Hari Om.